Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights, a podcast brought to you by the Society of Entrepreneurs and hosted by Pearson Crutcher and Jay Healy. The Society of Entrepreneurs is a membership organization founded to promote entrepreneurship and provide education and resources to Memphis business owners.
In this podcast, we'll have a series of interviews with accomplished business owners and entrepreneurs in Memphis, Tennessee. There are so many great entrepreneurs in Memphis, and their stories need to be told.
Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights.
Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. We hope you enjoy this conversation with Fred Jones. Fred started Southern Heritage Classic, an annual football game between Jackson State and Tennessee State, over 30 years ago.
As you will hear in our interview today, the Classic is about so much more than a football game. It now incorporates a full weekend of festivities that have a substantial economic impact on our city.
Enjoy our conversation with Fred Jones. Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. We're excited to have Fred Jones with us. Fred Jones is the CEO of Summit Management Corporation, but also the founder of Southern Heritage Classic. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Really excited. Southern Heritage Classic has certainly become a very, very well-known Memphis institution. So we're very happy to have you, the founder, here with us today.
Glad to be still talking about the Classic.
33 years?
33 in 2022.
That's amazing.
For somebody who's not familiar, how would you describe it?
A mini version of the Super Bowl. Most people think about a lot of things about the Super Bowl, but it's a football game, and they built a lot of activities and events around that, and we've done the same thing with the Southern Heritage Classic.
And what teams participate?
Jackson State from Jackson, Mississippi, and Tennessee State from Nashville.
Wonderful. Well, let's kind of go back to the beginnings. And you said you're a native Memphian. You grew up here. Can you talk a little bit about growing up in Memphis?
It was a fun time. with your comparison to, again, with what's happening now versus then, it was, you know, we lived in the Claiborne Homes projects. I was able to do something that nobody was able to do now, as I walked to school for 12 years from Lonzo Locke, who's no longer there, and Porter Junior High, which is no longer there, the building is, and Booker T. Washington High School, graduated in 66. Didn't realize how much fun you really were having, because you worked in the neighborhood, you went to school in the neighborhood, you played sports in the neighborhood. It was a great time.
Did you play football in high school?
Yeah, I played at it. wasn't that good. I played football, basketball, baseball. I was in the band. Ran a little track. I didn't do very much of that. So pretty athletic until next to the last game of the football season in 65. I tore up my knee, and something to this day I still have to deal with. So that was the end of my sports career. I picked up golf later, but in terms of having a chance of a scholarship and all that, that was over.
Initially, you worked in the music business. Is that correct?
No. Actually, that was coincidental how that happened. I was working at Union Planners Bank. I started working there in 1968. And I always say that because of the turbulent times of doing that era, that was where I ended up at the bank. A little background on that, I was going to Memphis State University and was a terrible student, to say the least. I mean, all Fs and all this, it was terrible. So I quit school. I was going to go to work with my father. He said he wasn't having it, you know, and I was keep trying. So I ended up getting a job at Union Planners Bank. And from there, they worked into that management, up in there to that management program. And then they transferred me out to the Bellevue branch, which was at that time on Bellevue and Macklemore, which was where the Stax Records did their business. So that was the beginning of my career. And I've been at it since, in some parts, in some shape or form, since 1970. But it was just coincidentally that they transferred me out to that branch, and that branch happened to be Stax Records. So you met Isaac Hayes, David Porter, Deanie Parker, the Soul Children. I already knew the Bar K's because we were in high school together. That probably the one of the longest days of my life in 19, I think it was 67 when they had the plane crash. And we were all kids, but I wasn't in the entertainment business then.
And then when you were talking to the people at Union Planers and you had those relationships, you kind of became a concert promoter, right?
Now, actually, I started as kind of what they would call a road manager for David Porter and a group called the Soul Children. And I struck up a relationship with Isaac and a lady by the name of Pearly Bowles who worked for him through the bank because I was the point person, more or less, one of the people that worked with the artists and what have you. And Shaft came out in 1971, okay, and they were going on tour. And as Isaac had it, they needed somebody who could count money. Well, working from the bank, I could definitely count money, but being an auditor and literally counting millions and millions of dollars and understanding how that worked. And that's kind of led to, I went with Isaac as a tour manager. We went everywhere for a little 4 years. And, you know, you kind of been bouncing around in entertainment business and got into big promotions and doing other stuff. So you met a lot of people along the way. Some of the main stars in the business, Tina Turner to Ray Charles to Count Basie, Sarah Vaughan.
And you've got some stories, don't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Saw it all. So how did working with those musicians morph into a football classic?
That was a challenge because you know how to, in some people's mind, you know how to do a show, promote a show, and artists and equipment and catering and transportation and all that stuff. And they couldn't really see that vision. And that was the vision that I brought to the table of taking this football game and making it a family event, trying to create something that we could have on a recurring basis. Prior to that, you know, they would play a game and then it might be 2-3 years before they could play it again. And that was part of the process of working through that and getting people to believe that you could do this on an annual basis. It's not a fly-by-night, you know, and that was kind of the challenge from the media. In their minds, it wasn't a football game. It was, you know, they're coming out for the halftime. They come out for a whole bunch of other things, but not the game. So that was a kind of, had to kind of really work hard to do that. But trying to convince people, both at the schools and in the community, that one, I knew what I was doing, and two, that what I was talking about could be something that could be done on an annual basis. That was the big, big challenge. And you know, Memphis has a reputation of not believing that things can happen. If you go back in history with a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, Holiday Inn and Piggly Wiggly and, you know, all the challenges probably Fred Smith had, Pit Hyde had with AutoZone, which was called something else before they became AutoZone.
Auto Shack.
Yeah. So it's a tough place, but it can be a rewarding place if you can stay long enough.
Tell me a little bit about the classic, because it is so much more than a football game. So describe a typical week leading up to the classic. I know you work on it all year round, but I mean, what events are people coming to in regard to the classic when they come to Memphis? I know the tailgate is very well known.
That has developed into something. Tailgating as a whole had developed into its own world, its own universe. But we had the ingredients for a good entertainment, a good family, good reunion, friends and family reunion. All of that has built itself into the classic. And then the other thing that is the big X factor is that Memphis has a lot to offer. You got Beale Street. And I always tell everybody this, that regardless of how great Nashville is, how great Atlanta is, how these other cities seem to be doing all of this stuff, they don't have a Beale Street.
No, they don't.
They do not have the food, the barbecue that we have in Memphis. So we have something to complement whatever we create. You have that complement already in place. And then a lot of people go to Graceland. A lot of people go to Stax Museum. A lot of people go to the Civil Rights Museum, Overton Square. You know, we have all of these things already in place on a year-round basis. So we just taken this event, put it in place, work hard at doing the events, you know, the fashion show, the concerts, the battle of the bands. We have a career fair that we have for young people to talk about employment possibilities, or people talk about going to college, but it's not like you can go to the McDonald's. It's just walk in and everything is already in place. There's a procedure and a process that you have to understand what you need to do with student aid and all of that, whatever it is that you need to know about going to college. So we're able to put that in place.
I'm sure that restaurants and bars and museums hotels and stuff are excited about your structure here. Do you have any idea what the impact it is you have on the community?
Well, the last survey was in 2019. The economic benefit is over $29 million.
Awesome. Yeah.
So you know how that works. You know, is you have $12 or $13 million and you have a multiplier, and the money doesn't stay in one place. It goes on. I think I'm always asked, did I anticipate all of this being that way? If you talk to other people when they start their journey, it can be all over the place till it finally settles in to a certain way, then you take advantage of it. Again, the classic is, wasn't a tourism event. It wasn't a family reunion. It wasn't a gathering place at the beginning. It was just, we're going to have this football game, and it just kind of went on from there. But it kept going in a good, positive direction. And you hear it a lot about the HBCU college, Black college experience. We was able to capture that and do it in such a way that people were drawn to it. Because the biggest audience that we have for the classic, the event, are from people who have never attended either one of the schools. They are attracted to the event. They're attracted to the event in Memphis. And that's another thing, too. There are a lot of people who have gone to other places from Memphis. I mean, think back when I was a kid, before I was even around, a lot of people migrated from the Delta. They moved, migrated to Memphis. They left Memphis and went to St. Louis and went to Chicago. So nowadays, you have people who have gone off to college or got careers other places. We're giving them the opportunity to come back home, and they're coming back around the Southern Heritage Classic.
Well, they probably grew up going to the game and then come home to visit.
Well, I mean, you hear a lot of that. You know, you hear a lot of stories like that. I mean, people getting married, people meeting their significant other, their spouses at the game, their friends getting together, that kind of thing. But that's just a byproduct of it. And you mentioned about the economic side. There are people who got little, what we would call little small businesses. One of the small businesses, not so small, is catering. Doing the catering during the classic is unreal. If you're in the catering business, if you're in the food business, if you're in the concession business, if you're in the car washing business, whatever it is, whatever business you're in, you're able to conduct your business during the classic.
That's awesome. I know it is a very, very popular event. Tell me about the name.
I think the initial idea came from the summit in Houston. At one point, I was a nomad when it came to Memphis. I was never here. I was always gone. I was always doing a show, an event somewhere. And summit just seemed to be at the top. And we made it to T's because you really wanted to be able to go to the top. And I guess that's part of the dream of every entrepreneur or with an idea, you know, you just think you're going to go to the top. I tell people, you never met a songwriter who didn't write a song and said, this is going to be a number one record, in spite of all the other things. But Summit seemed to be going to the top, and two T's on Summit seemed to be really going to the top.
It's got the emphasis on the top, that way you
said. Yeah, but it was, again, I can't recall if I ever had another name.
I think it's a great name. How do you find the best people that work with you? How do you go about finding and keeping those people involved?
I don't think you find them. You might have recognized them. People have certain talents. And I got a lot of creative people. And I could say this, and I say it jokingly. Working with creative people takes another skill set. They're all talented, but you have to have patience and understanding and kid gloves in order to make it work. But you, once you get one of those really talented people, the kind of way of staying with you, give you a good example. I know you've heard this DJ radio personality, they've changed the name over the years, called Tom Prestigiacomo. When I was starting the classic and started working on it in 1989, the first year was 1990, I get a call from Tom. Say, I heard that you're doing this game. Do you need an announcer at the game? And I'm busy getting ready for year one. So you got a whole bunch of things that you got to try to fix. And I said, yes. He said, I'm willing to work for it. Tom has been there ever since.
That's awesome.
And I have to bring this because you have a lot of unfortunate Memphis kids, you know, with the racial thing that goes on here, goes on probably everywhere, but here, since we live here, it never even occurred to me that Tom was a white guy. It never, I knew who he was. I mean, right. Tom was a legend. I mean, you knew who he was. But I viewed it as somebody who wanted to be with me to help me doing what they do. And he stepped forward. If you talk to him right today, he's the most uplifting, supportive guy that you ever have. So did I need an announcer? Did I hold an audition? Did I do all of that? Tom said he wanted to do it. That was it. And look, I'm glad he's been around. Even when he moved out of town, we found a way for to bring him back to help us out.
That's great. Yeah. Those relationships are important, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Do you have any mentors or anybody that helped you as you were trying to grow this huge event?
Well, we can focus in on the classic, and I get to that part of it. But when I first started working for Isaac, there was a gentleman that in Atlanta, Georgia, by the name of Henry Wynn. He had a company called Supersonic Attractions, and he did all the big tours. And he took Isaac on the big tour for the first time. And I watched how he operated, and he was an older guy, and I was a younger guy. And watched him work, and he trusted me to help him take care of the business. Another guy, as I started doing shows, his name was Andrew Mitchell, better known as Sunbeam, who owned the Club Paradise and Club Handy that was down on Beale Street. I watched him how he structured his business, how he handled his business, how calm he was in very stressful times, but he was always prepared. And the other part of this is a guy by the name of Dave Swearingen. He was the marketing director at the Commercial Appeal at the time. And the first day I got to talk to Dave about this idea, it wasn't called Southern Heritage Classic. It was just idea. And I took a sheet of paper and I scribbled down what I thought it was going to look like. And he said that very day, said, if you pull this off, you're going to have the biggest event in this town. And that was different from what other people were saying to me, that it couldn't happen here. And they've given me all types of support, all type of advice. And a lot of that things that I'm doing today that you see was because of Dave Swearingen, the late Dave Swearingen. And without those people that you can call on or really believe in you as a person, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Do you wind up mentoring anybody else?
Yeah, you talk to people all the time. Somebody's going to call you or send you a note or see you at lunch and I got this idea, what do you think about it? Some of them are not that good or whatever the case might be. But one thing that I will not do, I will not tell a person they can't be or won't be successful, like people told me. I will simply say to them, it's a very difficult road and you have to be prepared to work hard, whether things are going well or things not going so well. And if you do, you have a chance to be successful. But I will not, I repeat, will not tell them that they cannot be successful. I remember when I was part of the pursuit team, a group of people that banded together to get the Grizzlies here. And how many people told us that we were not going to be successful? You got some of the top people, business people, finance people, trying to do what is considered at that time the impossible. Because Memphis has never had a major league franchise at the time. We tried to get the NFL. We had some minor league football and all that. But trying to pull that off, and obviously we pulled it off, you know. And
going well.
building a new building, you had the pyramid. That won't work. Got to build a new building. You got to do all of that. And you got to convince all of these people, the average person, the business community, the politicians, the NBA, everybody had to be convinced that this could work. And we did it.
Sure did. Look at us now, right? Those are fun things to go back to think about. What was the best piece of advice you ever got from anybody?
Look at the big picture. All of this stuff is a struggle. When I'm trying to do the classic, I mean, people didn't believe in the people that was going to be directly benefiting from it. Didn't really believe that it could happen, not the way that I was talking about. But you had to focus in on the big picture. We did it with the Grizzlies and the FedEx Forum and all that. We focused on the fact that if we get this done, look where we would be.
So this is a question we ask everybody, but do you think that entrepreneurs are born or taught?
I think I probably learned. You're not born with it. I mean, if I take my history, take my family's history, that was not that kind of spirit. I mean, my parents were born in the early 40s and what they had to encounter with Jim Crow and eating at a certain place, eating at a certain time, making whatever made money that you could make. So that part of it wasn't. But having said that, I'm thinking about my father, this guy I was telling you about who never owned anything, had the best spirit about keep trying. He was big on relationship building. So I think that trying to answer your question, you acquire this along the way. And for me, acquiring all of this as I travel around the country, around watching other people, working with other people, seeing what happened and what have you, and acquiring that bit of information. And then when I had the opportunity, whether it was the Grizzlies or the Southern Heritage Classic, you're able to apply it. So I think you acquire this as you, with my background, it wasn't something that I inherited. I just kind of got into it and just kind of took advantage of it.
I would say to your benefit that you have to be qualified to be creative, come up with the ideas and maximize the opportunity.
Well, you know what? I think that this always surprises people. I graduated in 71 from then Memphis State University with a degree in finance and a minor in accounting. I'm looking at your face and you're going like, that doesn't have anything to do with promotions and shows.
It's a good thing you've got it though.
It comes into play. To your point, that played a big role in the success that we've been able to have with the things I've been involved in.
Sure, it made you uniquely qualified to be able to run an event because you've got to have the funds to be able to do anything, don't we?
Yeah, but the big thing with all of that, a big event or a little event, or big business or small business, is how you handle it, how you manage it. If you don't do that, you can have all the resources in the world and it doesn't work. So I never had all the resources. I had a lot of experiences. People believed in me all over the place. So I was collecting all of this. And when it came time to do this Southern Heritage Classic, this idea, I was able to put all those things together. And then when we had tough times, I was able to manage it through to get us to another day. So the big picture gets to be Katrina, 9/11, or storm or the pandemic was not the end of the day. And I think that's why it was so satisfying this year for everybody, knowing the background of all of these things over time. And now we have an opportunity to really do it in a special way, and they step forward. It was fun to watch how people responded this year in 21.
Well, you know, it has become a very well-known event here in Memphis. What else excites you about Memphis today? You grew up here. We've seen lots of changes. What's making you happy that you see in the city now?
There's a lot of positive things going on with Memphis. I mean, our downtown, some of the facilities that we're building and refurbishing, and we are trying to move forward with our image and what have you. I mean, obviously, our image took a hit from the events of 1968. Believe it or not, people talk about that.
I know that, and you've just really been talking about this and is helping all those people feel connected. And I know that you've given back a lot in the community. Do you continue to do that now, or is that something that you find important?
It's absolutely important. I've done some high profile giving back and what have you, but I tell people all the time when I do things to help them and whatever, I say, well, I don't need to all the accolades and what have you. But they'll go right out and say, well, you know, Fred Jones did this. But by the same token, they want to feel good and you let them do that. But you never stop doing that, you know, because those hands and those people over all of these years have been very supportive for me. I'm just one person. I can't put 40, 50,000 people, multiply 40, 50,000 times one Fred Jones. It doesn't work. It doesn't work to fill up the hotels or restaurants and doing business and what have you. It takes people to do that. So you have to understand that things, and you're giving back sometimes. It's not all with what you tangibly give them. But if you take the time to just talk to them, they want to get your point of view. What do you think about this, Fred? What about that? Okay. And taking the time to do that, only because people took time to talk to me. If Dave Swearinger had not taken that meeting, I didn't know Dave Swearinger. I knew of him. But if he had not taken that meeting, if other people along the way had not decided to support what we were doing. And it's easy to say that. I hear people, sports people all the time. Guy runs a play, catches a pass, throws a pass, whatever. And they always talk about the guy who made the key block. They call one play and someone decides, let's run another play and it ends up winning the game. It takes that kind of involvement to do that. Now, you need a point person. I'm the point person for the Southern Heritage Classic. I accept that responsibility. And it's a responsibility. You got all of these people who believe in and support in what you're doing. You cannot go out and be irresponsible and not do the thing that it takes to make it successful. It's very important. And if I would pass that on to anybody, if you're in charge, take charge.
You make a good point about progress in Memphis and how we've made some, but we still have a long way to go. Are there any organizations, currently are having a good impact on the community?
We just need to lead more from the city of Memphis. There are a lot of things that historically that could have been differently, and we won't go into that, but the fact that as the city goes and our leadership goes within the city, that's how the city goes. We have a lot of organizations, and without those organizations, we cannot be successful on the verge of really being really successful. We are really close as a city, really close. But it's going to take the leadership of the city with all our city council and mayors and the business people and the Chamber of Commerce and all that, working in tandem in order to get that done. And that's one thing I can say. If I had to say one organization outside of the city government, I would say the Chamber of Commerce. They've come a long, long way in really putting forth where the least among us, the one with the most, bridging that gap and saying at the end of the day, collectively work together to get things done for the betterment of the city.
Well said.
Very well said.
What do you like to do for fun when you're not running this?
For me, at one time I was playing golf, but I play so bad now. I have a thing I created for myself called the Road Less Travel. And what I'll do is that I go out in different parts of the city or different parts of the area, northern Mississippi in particular, one area where I just ride around those communities. Don't really ever talk to anybody. Just kind of just observing what's happening in Fraser, what's happening, spend a lot of time in Whitehaven, or different pockets, you know, because of what happened when the expressway came through years ago. A lot of these communities got disconnected and they just sitting over there isolated. So I just go through and ride up and down the street, and I don't know, it just kind of settles me down. And invariably you'll see somebody that knows you and they want to have a conversation. But, you know, you're not trying to do anything particular. You just, that's a quiet moment, and it keeps me connected to the city and the area. And that's been good for me.
Cool.
That's great. We really appreciate this. Cannot tell you how much we appreciate what you do for this community and what you've built here and being part of the Society of Entrepreneurs. And it's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. And again, I think all of us in closing want the very best for Memphis and our community. And we just got to put more effort in making it happen, to get more people engaged, and get more people being successful, and those things are important. So wherever I have opportunity to do that, I'm willing to do that. That's been good for me, and hopefully it's been good for other people that will continue to do that.
Yep.
I certainly think so. So thank you very much. We appreciate this, Fred.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Fred Jones. If you want to hear more about Fred or the Southern Heritage Classic, you can look in our show notes.